Welcome to episode 148 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for March the 24th, 2010. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, Georgia cyclists converge on the state capitol. United States Department of Transportation endorses complete streets. Tony Kornheiser inserts foot in the mouth and inserts guest into show. Plus, a product recall, pro cycling news, and an armed American causes an international incident when he rides his bike across the border. Following that, spring tune-ups for your bicycle just in time for riding season, and pod-safe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast, and this episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Jensen USA. We've talked about Jensen USA, but did you know that Jensen USA has been voted best online retailer for 3 years running by MTBR? Did you know that Jensen USA's customer service is number one among their customers, and that price point, well, it's just following right behind. And now Jensen USA has a special contest for Jensen USA customers and Fredcast listeners. So here is the deal. We want to hear the best customer experience with Jensen USA, and we're going to give a prize to the best experience in our opinion. Jensen USA is offering up an Easton EC70 Aero Road Bar for the best experience that comes in either via email to the fredcast@gmail.com with a subject line, Jensen USA, or via voicemail to our voicemail hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. We're going to gather up all of the great experiences you send in between now and midnight on April the 7th, 2010. And then we will let you know on the very next episode of the Fredcast who is going to win the EC70 bar. And just know that if you send in your experiences either via email or voicemail, we reserve the right to use those on the air here on the Fredcast. Go ahead and check out Jensen USA. That's jensenusa.com/thefredcast, or go to thefredcast.com and click the Jensen USA banner. We thank Jensen USA so much for their support, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. And now, let's get to the news for this week's episode of the Fredcast. You know, 16 states here in the United States have a so-called three-foot law. That law in those states states that drivers must maintain a minimum of 3 feet of distance between themselves and cyclists when they are passing those cyclists on the road. Well, the state of Georgia in the southeast portion of the United States is considering just such a law for themselves. There's some legislation in the state of Georgia's House of Representatives Rules Committee that would establish just such a 3 foot safe passing zone law. That bill is being sponsored by State Representative Wendell Willard from Sandy Springs, Georgia. And earlier this week, a large group of cyclists converged on the state capitol. By all reports, more than 1,200 cyclists on Tuesday, urging lawmakers to pass that safe passing bill. Police escorted these cyclists from the city of Decatur and the city of Roswell, and they all converged on the state capitol steps just before noon. Now, because of the rules of the Georgia State Legislature, this bill has to pass at least one chamber of the two-chambered state legislature there in Georgia by Friday of this week. That's known as crossover day. If it does not pass at least one chamber by that point, it will be dead for this session of the legislature. That means that those of you who are in the state of Georgia, the time is now for you to call your state legislators and get them to pass this bill, which, as I said, is already in 16 other states in the United States and is already beginning to make a difference. Call your state legislators now. Let them know that you want to see Representative Wendell Willard's safe passing bill passed this week and sent on to the other chamber for passage before the end of this year's legislative session there in the state of Georgia. Now, unless you're deeply involved in cycling advocacy, it's possible that you may have heard the term complete streets before and not be fully aware of the meaning of the term. And this will come up in another segment of the show in just a moment as we talk about the Lance Armstrong Tony Kornheiser flap. But first, a little bit of good news and a little bit of an education. Wikipedia says that in urban planning and highway engineering, complete streets are roadways designed and operated to enable safe, attractive, and comfortable access and travel for all users, pedestrians, cyclists, motorists, and public transport users of all ages and abilities are able to safely and comfortably move along and across a complete street. According to Wikipedia, proponents claim that complete streets also create a sense of place and improve social interaction while generally improving property and its adjacent land values. Well, complete streets became a term that was mainstreamed over the last week when Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood issued a new policy statement that calls for full inclusion of pedestrians and cyclists in transportation projects, with particular attention paid to transit riders and people of all ages and abilities, essentially making complete streets the policy of the United States Department of Transportation. According to a blog post by Secretary LaHood, quote, "This is the end of favoring motorized transportation at the expense of non-motorized transportation." Fully implementing complete streets and making it the official policy of the United States government and the law of the land is going to take more time, but having the Secretary of Transportation endorsing a complete streets policy is definitely a huge step in the right direction for those of us who are non-motorized users of this nation's roadways. This opens the door for a better discussion, a better dialogue of complete streets, and a day when cyclists, pedestrians, motorists, and public transportation will finally be viewed by all people in society and by urban planners and transportation designers as equal members of the system. We definitely have a long way to go, but this is huge for cycling advocates and will allow us to move our ball farther down the field much quicker. Kudos to Secretary of Transportation LaHood for making this bold statement and for making this step. And speaking of bold statements, there was a statement made a couple of weeks ago that I ignored. And I ignored it because I thought that it was just the loud mouth rantings of a sports talk radio station shock jock who was simply saying things in order to get ratings. The problem, however, is that when Tony Kornheiser made his comments, essentially urging people to run down cyclists on Washington, D.C. roadways, he made those statements from a bully pulpit and one which is not listened to by a great many people who are well acquainted with the issues that we have when we're out there on the roads, and more often than not are listening to him as they're behind their steel and glass enclosures known as cars. The issue came to the attention of Bob Roll, who video blogged about it on the Versus.com website, and then eventually went to the attention of one Lance Armstrong, who, through his tweets, let the entire cycling community know exactly how he felt about Tony Kornheiser and his comments, calling him at one point, quote, a douchebag, unquote, and then challenging Tony directly on his Twitter feed, finally getting a phone conversation together with Kornheiser, who apparently in that conversation apologized to Lance Armstrong for his comments and then invited Armstrong on his show. Lance went on the show and had a confrontation, well, a very friendly confrontation with Kornheiser, and by many accounts, achieving the goal that many cyclists would like, which is making motorists aware of exactly how vulnerable we feel and exactly how vulnerable we are when we're out there on the road. So kudos to Lance Armstrong for bringing this important issue in front of an audience that might otherwise not have known what some of our concerns are when we are out there on the road. We discussed this on the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast on Friday at great length. You'll be able to hear everybody's opinions about Armstrong's appearance on the show, as well as Kornheiser's comments. You can check that out at www.the-spokesmen.com. Suffice it to say that there were those who felt that Lance rewarded Kornheiser by coming on his show. Admittedly, Lance Armstrong being perhaps one of the most well-known personalities in the world, let alone the world of sport, and getting a guest like that on your show is a huge coup. And there were many who felt that Lance had rewarded Kornheiser in some way. Plus, there was the opinion that it seemed that Lance accepted an apology that nobody else heard but Lance. And then there were those who simply felt that it was a good thing bringing these issues in front of the non-cycling community. As for me, I was glad that Lance went on the show. I just didn't feel that he went far enough, and perhaps there were some conversations off the air that to which we weren't privy that may have explained why Lance didn't push quite far enough, and interestingly enough, why Lance's sponsor got a plug at the end of the show. For more on this controversy and on our opinions on it, go ahead and listen to episode 49 of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. That's www.the-spokesman.com. And speaking of Bob Roll and Versus.com, I am pleased to let those of you who aren't aware know that Versus is finally back on the American satellite television system, DirecTV, after a more than six-month argument between the network and the satellite television service. DirecTV dropped Versus after their contract concluded at the end of August. The two sides were not able to reach an agreement until just about a week ago. And finally, Versus is now back on DirecTV Channel 603, just in time for the NHL playoffs beginning next month, and in plenty of time for all of us to enjoy this year's Tour de France on DirecTV and Versus on Channel 603. On a personal note, I dropped Comcast earlier this week and picked up DirecTV, so I am pleased to have Versus back so that I can get my dose of cycling on television. And now we come to the part of the show, part of the news portion of the show that some of you love and some of you simply love to hate. But this is a part of the show that has been in the Fredcast since day one and will continue because I think it is way too important, and that is product recalls. Earlier today, the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission, in cooperation with 3T Cycling SRL in Italy, announced the voluntary recall of the Ventus Limited and Ventus Team aero bars. Now, about 325 of these aero bars were produced and distributed by various distributors here in the United States. The problem is that the two rubber hand grips on the aero bars could loosen or slip off during use, posing, yes, a fall or injury hazard to the rider. 3T has received reports of two incidents involving adults with minor abrasions. Once again, this recall involves all Ventus Limited, Ventus Limited 17, Ventus Limited Gold, Ventus Limited Track, Ventus Team, and Ventus Team 17 aero bars. These aero bars were sold in one size and color for each model. Black with red stripe for the Team, black with a silver stripe for the Limited, and both will have the Ventus and 3T logos on the top side of the bar with the model name on it. These were sold through independent bicycle retailers and internet retailers nationwide from January 2008 through November 2009 for about $1,200 for the Limited and $1,000 for the Team models. And these were made in Taiwan. For more information on the recall and how to get a replacement aero bar, check out the show notes, which will take you to the CPSC's recall site as well as to the 3T recall site, or go to the new 3T.com/Ventus recall. Many of you listening to this episode of the Fredcast are owners of sealed bearing hubs and sealed bearing bottom brackets, and as a result, It's time to remove your helmet and nod your head to the passing of a great man and an innovator in the bicycle industry, and that was Phil Wood, who died March 14th at his daughter's home in Roseville, California. Phil was, depending on which report you read, 83 or 86, and reportedly passed away due to complications from pancreatic cancer. Phil Wood started the Phil Wood Company on April 1st, 1971, and then sold it in 1991, but he didn't go into retirement. Many don't know that he continued to have a brilliant mind, writing a textbook on, of all things, differential calculus, and a book on the theory of Turk's head knot, which is a continuously braided knot without end. He also tutored local students for years, earning an outstanding achievement award from the local school board. Phil Wood, thank you so much for your contributions to the cycling and bicycle industry. We hope that you ride on with tailwinds and rest in peace. Well, it's time to talk professional cycling news, starting with the week-long Tirreno Adriatico, which ended on Tuesday, March the 16th. The winner of the race, the general classification in this race, was none other than Stefano Garzelli of Italy. Garzelli finishing the race in 30 hours, 51 minutes, and 36 seconds. Michele Scarpone also finished in 30 hours, 51 minutes, and 36 seconds. But Garzelli took the win because he had won better finishing places in the seven stages of the race. Rounding out the top five of the final GC, Cadel Evans from Australia and Team BMC. Fourth, Maxim Iglinski from Kazakhstan and Team Astana. And in fifth, Robert Gesink from the Netherlands and Team Rabobank. A few days later, the cycling community celebrated spring with La Clásica de Primavera, the spring classic, better known by everyone else as the 101st edition of Milan San Remo. And everyone was looking forward to watching Lance Armstrong participate in this most famous one-day classic, but unfortunately, Lance had to pull out due to a stomach bug. And while the seven-time former winner of the Tour de France was not at this year's race, there were five former winners of Milan San Remo present and riding at this year's race, including Alessandro Petacchi, Filippo Pozzato, Oscar Freire, Fabian Cancellara, and 2009's winner, Mark Cavendish. Milan-San Remo is often called the Sprinter's Classic, and you could tell not only by the field, but also by the final top 10. The race this year was won by Oscar Freire from Rabobank, 298 kilometers in 6 hours, 57 minutes, and 28 seconds. Right on his wheel, Tom Bonin from Quickstep at the same time. Also at the same time, in third, Alessandro Petacchi. In fourth, Sasha Modolo. In fifth, Daniele Benatti. In sixth, the God of Thunder, Tor Husovd. In seventh, Francesco Giannini. In eighth, Maxim Iglinski. In ninth, Philippe Gilbert. And in tenth, Luca Paolini. All at the same time. At the end of the day, Freire was quoted as saying, quote, "Winning in San Remo is always a fantastic feeling. I'm really pleased that I managed to do it again. My teammates worked very hard today and kept in good position and out of trouble. I have to dedicate this victory to them." Tom Bonin, who came in second, often one of the winners of so many sprints in professional cycling, said, quote, "I gave everything I could in that sprint. I was in good position, but I just could not get onto his wheel. In the end, he had me by 2 bike lengths. The next major event in professional cycling and going on right now is the Volta Ciclista a Catalunya, or the Tour of Catalonia. This goes on from March 22nd through the 28th, and after three stages, leading in the general classification is Joaquim Rodriguez from Spain and Team Katusha in 9 hours, 4 minutes, and 12 seconds. In second, it's Javier Tondo from Spain and Team Cervelo, 10 seconds back. In third, Luis Leon Sanchez from Spain and Castaparna. He's 48 seconds back. In fourth, Nicholas Roach from Ireland and AG2R, 1 minute 20 behind. And in fifth, Christian Korin from Slovenia and Team Likigas, same time as Nicholas Roach. We will have the final results of the Tour of Catalonia on the next episode of the Fredcast, and the next major cycling event is Gent-Wevelgem on March the 28th. The great thing about spring is that there is a ton of professional cycling coming up, including between now and the end of April, the Criterium International, where Contador and Armstrong will meet yet again, Gent-Wevelgem, Tour of Flanders, the Tour of the Basque Country, Circuit de la Sarthe, Paris-Roubaix, Amstel Gold, Flèche Wallonne, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, and the Tour de Romandie. Lots of great cycling to come. Couple of quick updates on the racing and dope scene. Ricardo Rico is ready to get back to racing after serving his 20-month ban for doping at the 2008 Tour de France. Rico has joined the Ceramica Flaminia team in Italy and says, quote, "This is a second debut for me. I've really worked hard to prepare myself for this new opportunity. Cycling is my job, and from now on, I won't make the mistakes I made in the past." And speaking of mistakes, Alejandro Valverde's lost his appeal before the Court of Arbitration for Sport. As a result, they've upheld his 2-year suspension for a doping offense when a DNA sample matched blood found at a Madrid clinic known for doping, and when traces of EPO were found in a blood bag taken from the clinic during a police investigation. The suspension remains in place until May 2011, but only in the nation of Italy. Meanwhile, also in Italy, the teams for the 2010 Giro d'Italia were announced recently, and of the 22 names, none of them were Team Radio Shack, and that seemed to surprise a lot of people, leading people to believe that for some reason, the new American team led by Johan Bruneel and Lance Armstrong had somehow been snubbed by the Giro organizers. Writing in a blog post, however, Johan Bruneel pointed out that they never had planned to participate in this year's Giro d'Italia, favoring instead to go to the rescheduled Tour of California, where Levi Leipheimer will be defending his championship. Among the invited teams to the 2010 Giro d'Italia, Acqua e Sapone, AG2R, Androni, Giocattoli, Astana, Bouygues Telecom, BMC, Castapagna, Cervelo, Colnago, Cofidis, Futon, Garmin, Lampre, Liquigas, Omega, Quickstep, Rabobank, Sky, Columbia, Katusha, Milram, and Saxo Bank. Now, moving away from professional cycling, for those of you that are here in the Mountain West, well, the days have been getting longer, the sun's been staying out longer, and the snow has finally been melting, and that means that bicycle season is finally getting underway at Yellowstone National Park. We seem to talk about this every year. Yellowstone opens some of its roads to cyclists before those roads are ever open to motorists. I've got to get up there 1 year when this happens because it has to be spectacular. Last Saturday, bicyclists were allowed to ride between West Yellowstone, Madison, Norris, and Mammoth Hot Springs. Now, these roadways probably will still be covered with some layers of ice and snow, and therefore you cyclists have to be prepared for winter weather. Furthermore, the National Park Service recommends that cyclists ride single file and, perhaps most importantly, carry bear spray. According to the National Park Service, it may be a month or more before the roads in the interior park are ready for visitors traveling in cars, RVs, and buses, and until then, we cyclists have a chance to experience Yellowstone in a way that perhaps it is experienced by very few humans here in the 21st century. Enjoy that ride. And finally, a story out of Canada that only serves to continue perpetuating certain stereotypes about Americans. I only mention it because there is a bicycle involved, and, well, just the way that the guy is described was just too classic to pass up. Quote, "A firearm-toting American was arrested Wednesday in southeastern Saskatchewan after illegally crossing the border on a bicycle. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police received a call of a suspicious male in the Bromhead area, approximately 34 kilometers from the border. When officers apprehended the 41-year-old, they discovered he was carrying a .22 caliber handgun in his pocket and a .22 caliber rifle in his backpack and an axe. Sergeant Darrell Milo said the man is from Missouri and had no fixed address, adding the backpack was filled with clothing and it appeared he'd been traveling. Police have yet to determine why the wanderer was over 1,300 miles from his home state. Quote, it's interesting, but I can't speculate on this more. Unquote. Attention, listeners in Canada. Not all Americans are firearm and axe toting, despite the fact that many of us ride bicycles. And with that, here ends the news for this episode of the Fredcast, eh? Now, before we go on to tonight's feature, when we talk to Josh Boggs, the pro bike wrench, about what you can do to tune up your bike to get ready for the riding season and get it out of your basement or out of your garage and back out on the road, it's time to talk about our longtime sponsor, Audible. Go to audiblepodcast.com/cycling to sign up for your free 14-day trial of the Audible Listener Gold program. And by doing that, you're going to get a free Audible book to listen to and enjoy and keep, whether you stay an Audible member or not. But chances are, I believe, because you love podcasts and you love audio entertainment, you're going to love Audible. And it's more than 60,000 titles in every genre you can imagine of audiobooks and audio entertainment. And tonight's pick, well, this one goes without saying. It's Gary Vaynerchuk's book, Crush It. Why now is the time to cash in on your passion. Listen to this little clip of Gary reading just a portion of the beginning of his book, and you'll understand why it is that I am recommending this book.
Live your passion. What does that mean anyway? It means that when you get up for work every morning, every single morning, you are pumped because you get to talk about or work with or do the thing that interests you most in the world. You don't live for vacations because you don't need a break from what you're doing. Working, playing, and relaxing are one and the same. You don't even pay attention to how many hours you're working because to you, it's not really work. You're making money. But you do whatever it is you're doing for free. Does this sound like you? Are you living or just earning a living? You spend so much time at work. Why waste it doing anything other than what you love most? Life is too short for that. You owe it to yourself to make a massive change for the better. And all you have to do is go online and start using the tools waiting for you there.
You know, I started the Fredcast because I have a passion about cycling. I think that comes through in every show that I do and every tweet that I write. I have a passion for this. And that's why people say things to me like, hey, David, do you ever get any sleep? Sleep? Who cares? I'm getting plenty of rest, but I am loving what I do. Bringing this to you and listening to Gary read this book shows why. It doesn't matter if I lose a couple of hours sleep a night or two a week to get this show out to you. And you can do the exact same thing by following Gary Vaynerchuk's advice. Go to audiblepodcast.com/cycling and sign up now and get Crush It. And start living your passion today. We thank Audible for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Audible. Well, next up, I've got an interview I did earlier this evening with Josh Boggs, the famous pro bike wrench. I think this needs very little introduction because Josh and I introduce it coming up right here, but this is an offshoot of something that I mentioned at the end of the last episode of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. At the end of that show, we always do our tips. It is, I think, a listener favorite portion of the show and perhaps the portion of the show that the hosts of the show tend to hate the most and tend to make jokes out of. But I gave a tip, and that was that it's time to bring your bike out of your house, out of your garage, and get it back out on the road. And that means it's time to do a spring tune-up. And so I had a discussion with Josh to get his insight into what that should mean and what you should do before you get back out on the roads on your bike this season. I'm really pleased to welcome to the show Josh Boggs. You may be familiar with Josh, although we're going to let him introduce himself here in a second. He's the famous pro bike wrench from Twitter and from the blogosphere and, of course, from the Velo Reviews podcast. Josh, welcome to the Fredcast.
Thanks, David. It's good to be here.
Hey, it's great to have you. You know, the other day we recorded an episode of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast at www.the-spokesmen.com. Had to get that in there. And, you know, at the end of the show, we always do tips. And my tip was, considering the fact that it's starting to warm up here in the mountains of Utah, and I finally am able to get my bike off the trainer and out on the roads, my tip was, this is happening with a lot of people all over the Northern Hemisphere. Now is a good time to do a tune-up on your bike. And I thought I'd invite you on the show so we could talk a little bit about what that means in specifics so that people have an idea of what they should be doing with their bikes as they get back into the riding season. But first, Josh, tell us a little bit about your credentials. Who are you and why did I have you on the show to talk about this?
Oh, well, you mentioned famous. I don't know exactly how famous I am, but I've kind of wrapped my life around the cycling industry. So I'll just kind of start from the beginning. When I was 14, I started mountain biking, kind of got wrapped up into it there. And then eventually kind of made my way into bike shops just regionally in the Southeast and started making my way into the professional circuit for a little while. Got my race mechanics license, did a couple things with, you know, some neutral support teams such as like Mavic and Cane Creek. And then went on to work with the Jittery Joe's professional team for a small period of time where I met my wife on the road there. From there, just back into bike shops with some occasional stints on the road. 2007, I was the head mechanic for the Aaron's women's cycling team as we traveled the country. And most recently, I guess, I assisted with some of the bike builds for the Kenda Pro Cycling team presented by Gear Grinder a few weeks back in Macon, Georgia. So I know my way around bicycles a little bit. Currently, I'm working at Outspoken Bicycles in Woodstock, Georgia, and I'm a featured member / blogger / podcaster on VeloReviews.com.
So just a little bit of experience around bikes.
Yeah, I guess you could just say it's a little.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were talking a little bit off the air about this subject of tune-ups. And one of the things that I mentioned on the Spokesman was, look, you can do this yourself or you can take it into your local bicycle shop. And I'd really like to start there because you've got experience in a bike shop. And of course, all of us have taken our bikes to shops before. Let's talk a little bit about what a cyclist should expect when they take their bike in and they say, here, I haven't ridden this all winter, or, you know, I've only ridden it on my trainer and I haven't been outside. What sorts of things should they expect when they go to their bike dealer to have it tuned up?
Well, first and foremost, David, you should expect for the mechanics or the people in the service department, the technicians, I guess you could say, you should expect them to put your bike in a stand and do a thorough estimate of the bike. By thorough estimate, we're checking front to back, we're checking systems, including brakes, derailleurs, just anything on related to the drivetrain, looking for looseness, things here and there. If it's been sitting for a while, it could have dry rotted tires. It just depends on, you know, the conditions it's been sitting in or how long it's been stored or, you know, once again, like locale. Like if you're in, say, Seattle, you might have a little bit more rust on your chain than somebody in, let's say, Arizona, you know. So depending on the condition of the bike and everything, you can expect for some extensive repairs. But most shops, I would say, have a pretty basic, we call ours a deluxe tune-up package. And they're somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, on the cheap side, I would say $60, $75. And that's pretty inexpensive to, you know, $100. To even like $200 for a complete overhaul. So there's several different options depending on the what you need and the severity of the repairs.
So when the consumer walks into the bike shop, should they specifically ask for one over the other, or should they let the mechanic kind of lead them in the direction of which way they should go based on his or her assessment of the bike?
Well, it depends on how the consumer, how comfortable they are with their knowledge of the bicycle. If they're fairly certain, hey, my wheel's out of true, it's wobbling, and there's a specific repair, you should definitely let the mechanic know. at a really good shop, or you know, any shop I think should do this, the estimate that they provide in the repair stand should be like the be all end all. That should explain pretty much everything you're going to need. And you know, they're not trying to, as a consumer, please, whoever's listening to this, please don't think that the mechanic's just trying to screw you out of a couple extra bucks here or something. You know, most of us that are in the cycling industry are in it for a reason. We're very, very passionate about it. Those in the service department, they just want to see your bikes running properly. So if they're suggesting something, obviously they're seeing something. We're not like, and I'm not going to say this to offend car salesmen, but we're not car salesmen trying to get a little bit more commission out of things here and there most of the time. It's just, you know, if we see something and it's glaringly obvious that something's wrong, you're going to be a lot better off and a lot more happy to do it up front rather than to wait a while and say, oh, well, I'm in the middle of my century and now my shifting's not right. Maybe I should have got that cable and housing that the mechanic recommended. So yeah, you should expect a couple little repairs or something like that if the bike's been sitting around for a while. But if you're pretty confident that there's not a whole lot wrong with it, then maybe just like a basic tune-up package or something, just to kind of get it fine-tuned and just kind of, you know, knock the dust off of it and detail it a little bit, just to make it look good and run good.
You know, your point about being concerned if the mechanic is trying to screw you is something that I hear all the time. Hey, I walked in my local bike shop and, you know, they wanted to charge me $150 for a tune-up. And wow, it just seemed to me like that was just their way to try to get as much money out of me as possible. And my comment typically is exactly what you said. Look, these people are usually passionate about what they do. They're not there to steal your money, but it really points out something that I also tell people, which is have a relationship with your shop. Be loyal if they're good to you, if they treat you right as a customer, and start a relationship with them so that when you walk through the door, they recognize you, they know what kind of a cyclist you are, and they know what your bike's gonna need. A funny story on my side was, I was going out of town, something went wrong on my bike, and I said to my wife, would you do me a favor, just take it to my local bike shop, and they'll know what to do. She walked through the door, and within 2 minutes, well, not 2 minutes, within about 5 seconds, the mechanic said, what's wrong with David's bike? And he didn't know her. He knew my bike. And that meant something to me because I knew that he was going to take good care of it. You have a lot of customers coming into your shop like that, where you just know them by their bike?
Oh, exactly. Absolutely. We see a lot of customers like on a regular basis. Our shop is not one of the, it's not one of these like pristine, sterile environments like you'll find at some shops. Not that that's a bad thing. That's great for the retail environment and everything. But we kind of cater more towards just the average Joe, or, you know, we'll go out of our way to do something and to please a customer that, you know, maybe another shop wouldn't do. We'll customize a bike. We'll build a high end bike that's just one off where, you know, you'll have no other bike like it in the world. You know, it's your bike. You pick and choose your parts. You do that. That's the kind of shop that we are. Now, as far as like the service department and everything, recognizing people's bikes, yes, definitely. Because we do so much of that, it kind of bleeds over in that we will have two of the same frame come in, but you're like, okay, I remember putting that exact colored headset on that particular bike to make that color scheme work. Oh yeah, that's John's bike or that's Gabe's bike, you know. So there's definitely that. We recognize people. We like repeat customers. We like people that come in. Most importantly, we just like enthusiasts. I mean, guys in the shop like enthusiasts like ourselves. Every one of us guys in the shop I'm at, we ride. We ride bikes. We go riding with friends and people. We'll go to, I mean, my boss just recently went off with like three or four of our good customers to the North American Handmade Bike Show. They just went up there, had a good weekend, you know, and had a blast with those guys. And that's the kind of rapport we kind of build. We do like those kind of off the wall things. I mean, you know, not a lot of the big box stores and everything, or even like the chains and everything. Not a lot of those guys will do that. They're much more structured. We're just kind of, you know, a little different.
Yeah, it makes sense. Now let's get back to that initial tune-up in the shop. Sure. Because I think it goes without saying, right, that you're going to expect, they're going to check your shifting, they're going to check your brakes, they're going to make sure your chain is lubed. But I think where a lot of people still get confused, and they sort of think of this as black magic, Ooh, what about my hubs? What about my bottom bracket? What about my headset? How do I know when those need service?
Well, I mean, there's kind of obvious reason. It's obvious to a mechanic, I'll say, when something's wrong. If there's obvious play in the hubs, yeah, you definitely need to have that checked out. If the wheel's shaking side to side when it's fastened in the fork or in the rear end of the bike, yeah, you need to get that checked. Or if somebody is doing an estimate and that's not called out, then something's wrong. If you know it's wrong, like I said, point it out to them first, if just to kind of, you know, keep your bike working properly. Number one, you know, not trying to catch them in the act of missing something. You just want to make sure your bike's functional first and foremost. But as far as like the hubs and everything like that, we do touch those with our tune-up. Our tune-up package, I'll just run through it real quick. We do the hub adjustments. We do bottom bracket adjustments, headset adjustments, all the bearing systems on the bike. We'll do brake adjustments and gear adjustments front and back. We'll do wheel truing, you know, side to side and up and down on those with the tune-up. And then, you know, as an added bonus, we're going to take the bike out back and we wash every bike that gets a tune-up there. So we'll take it out back, do a professional wash, degrease the entire bike, clean it, re-lube it, air pressure in the tires, a little polish on the frame, and then you're good to go. So our package is $75. It's pretty inexpensive, but the number of tune-ups we do, we get pretty good at it. So, I mean, it doesn't really take us as much time as say, some more some people who don't do as many tune-ups and just do, like, the specific repairs. We like to think we have one of the more substantial packages. and then that probably didn't sound exactly great. We have a substantial tune-up package and a more substantial package than most people out there, most shops out there.
And, yes, I'm leaving that in the show.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Now, before we move away from the shop, one other question that I also get asked a lot, which is, hey, I got a carbon bike, and how often should I have that thing professionally inspected to make sure that I'm not going to have any issues, say, when I'm out of my Century or something like that?
I'm not really too worried about most of the carbon bikes out there. Hmm. The carbon bikes I would be worried about are obviously ones that have been crashed. And then, like, the early like, carbon and aluminum lugged bikes where they had the carbon tubes but, like, aluminum lugs, a lot of those, they didn't have the bonding down quite right. Mm-hmm. So I would obviously check anywhere on those for cracks. If it's been crashed, like I said, inspect it. I usually kind of run over my bike, I mean, even once a week, twice a week or whatever, because I'm riding to work and everything. I usually just kind of run over it with a rag and kind of wipe it down. And usually just from checking it out like that, as you're wiping it down, you can take a look and kind of see, okay, well, maybe my tire's worn out, or maybe, you know, this is a trouble spot to look at on my frame, or maybe, like, I dropped a chain on the bike and now I've got a gouge in the carbon. That's stuff you want to look at. If you know that something's happened to it, yeah, take an extra look at it. You know, once a year I'll take my bike completely down to the frame and then just kind of inspect everything and then work its way back up. That's with new cables, you know, things like that. New cables, usually new tires and tubes, new handlebar tape. You know, once or twice a year on something like that is not bad for me on a road bike.
Well, talking about wiping down the bike and doing some things for yourself, what can someone do at home if they'd like to give their bike a tune-up? And along those lines, what kind of tools should every cyclist have at home so that they can do their own service when they need to?
Definitely a good set of screwdrivers, hex wrenches. That's just kind of the basic stuff. If you're really looking for a good tool kit, like an all-around tool kit, I would say that Park Tools has probably selection of tool kits out there. Pedro's does a great job with their tool kit, don't get me wrong. But Park just has many different levels. So, I mean, you can get, for instance, like a 32-piece tool kit from those guys for, you know, a couple hundred bucks or whatever. But it's going to have everything you'll ever need at home plus the toolbox. That's worth its weight in gold right there. So you pick up I would pick up like just a toolbox right there that's already loaded with like some tools that you can take on the road with you, the hex wrenches, the chain tool, little things like that. Don't worry about the shop professional tools, you know, headset presses or, you know, connecting tools that's going to, you know, face the frame and the bottom bracket headset or head tube rather. Don't worry about all that kind of stuff. That's the kind of stuff that you just go pay for it at the shop, because it's not worth your time or money to figure out how to do it or spend that much money buying it. In my personal tool bag that I take with me on the bike, and this is something that's, I mean, you just got to take these tools with you. A couple extra tubes, patch kits, tire boot to basically patch the inside of the tire in case you cut it, road or mountain in that case. I carry CO2 cartridges, two of those with an inflator head. Let's see what else I take. Just some kind of multi-tool. Stick that in a little seat bag or in your Camelback, and you should be good to go. Even if you don't know how to use the stuff, even if you have absolutely no clue on how to change a flat or anything like that, it's better to have it and run upon somebody who does know how to do it than to be out there and just have to juice their materials, and then they kind of get upset when they get a flat and don't have any goods.
And so what about that tune-up at home? What sort of things should people do when they're working at home?
Tuning up at home, the best thing to do is learn how to adjust your brakes, learn how to adjust your derailleurs. Cables stretch. So you want to keep an eye on those. If it's a new bike or new cables, they're going to stretch out, and you need to know how to tighten those up. Some classes are available at bike shops. My particular shop, Outspoken, we offer a free basic maintenance class. I show people how to adjust the front and rear derailleurs to take some of that slack out in case they're out there and I can't show up with them on the group ride, you know. So we teach them how to do that, brake adjustments, gear adjustments. We teach them like how to look for loose hubs, how to adjust, well, not necessarily adjust the hubs, but say, okay, I'm going to shake my wheel side to side here. There's play. So obviously I want to get that fixed. I want to have a look at that. Other things, just making sure your chain's lubed, making sure there's air in your tires, basic stuff like that for the basic mechanic. If you wanted to get into any more kind of advanced classes or advanced mechanics, I would say look for and once again, I'm pumping Park here. They don't pay me yet, but I'm working on it. The Park Tool School. Go to parktool.com, and they got a list of shops that teach the Park Tool School. It's a 6 or 12-hour course or anything in between that shops can teach, and they're basically by a curriculum from Park Tool. You get a mechanics handbook, basically. It's the big blue book of bicycle repair. It'll tell you, you know, bicycles front to back, how to do anything on the bike you want. It's got diagrams. It's got color pictures. It'll tell you exactly which tool, obviously their tool, but it'll tell you exactly which Park tool you need to do the job. It makes it a lot easier because in the class you can get hands-on experience, and then you get home and you're like trying it. Don't get nervous because the picture's there. So if you want to get into that advanced mechanics, that would be definitely a good thing to have on hand.
Okay, makes sense. Well, a lot of great information for people. Definitely the time of year to do all of this work on your bike. And you know what? Not a bad time of year to start learning about it, because these are skills that you're going to be able to put to use the entire season and for seasons to come. Hey, Josh, thanks so much for coming on the Fredcast. And let everybody know where they can find you, and especially let them know about the Velo Reviews podcast.
Absolutely, David. You can find me most of the time on veloreviews.com. There's a pro bike wrench section. We actually have a question and answer time during the podcast where you can ask questions. I respond to them. You actually have opportunity to win nice prizes. Most recently, it's been Road ID bracelets for the question of the week. So you can find me there on veloreviews.com. The podcast, you can find a link to it there as well. I've got a blog. It's probikewrench.com. I've also got some nice giveaways going there pretty soon. Just got some new gear in the mail today. And you can find my shop, outspokenbikes.com, or you can also find it at thebestbikeshopintheuniverse.com.
Hey, before we go real quick, I was just remembering, you know, a day or two ago, I was watching your Twitter feed, and you were talking a lot about a ride to the state capitol there in Georgia. And I wonder if you might tell everybody what that was about and if there's a way that they can get involved in the same cause.
Sure. It's ours is called Georgia Rides to the Capitol. It's presented by Georgia Bikes, which is our state's advocacy group. Basically, a couple years ago, the mayors of a couple towns or a couple cities around Metro Atlanta got together and said, hey, let's do some advocacy stuff based around cycling. Let's go to the Capitol and let's basically make ourselves known to the legislators and see what we can get done. So it's gained a lot of steam over the last few years. I think they've been doing it 5 years now. And yesterday we left from a town called Roswell, just north of Atlanta. They have the Roswell Criterium there, one of the NRC crits. But we left there, led by the mayor and some others, and we rode from Roswell 20-some-odd miles down to the state capitol in Atlanta, gaining riders all along the way, finally meeting in the middle in downtown Atlanta in the middle of the day with, I mean, there must have been a couple thousand cyclists there. Basically, the reason they did it this week is because Friday there's supposed to be a proposed bill about the 3 foot to pass rule. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to gain some steam and trying to get that passed through the legislation in the state here. So it'll actually mandate drivers to pass to give us 3 feet of room while they pass us on a highway. So that's great for us. I hope it's going to get passed. I'm hearing a lot of flack, like maybe it won't get passed this time around. I have to go through again, but we certainly showed Atlanta at least how many cyclists are going to come out and support something like this. So it was a great advocacy, a way you can get involved. I would just contact your local or your state's cycling advocacy group, or even like your local club, and say, hey, look, what are we doing to kind of push something like this? Several states have got it going already, and hopefully Georgia will be the next.
And and for those of you that are in Georgia, look, you still have a couple of days because this show is going to come out before that vote. So make sure that you contact your state legislators and convince them of what a good idea this law is.
Definitely. Yeah. Thanks, David.
Hey, Josh, great to have you on the show. Thanks so much. Hope to have you on again real soon. And with that excellent interview with Josh Boggs, the Pro Bike Wrench, this is going to do it for this episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Hey, for those of you who are in the Salt Lake City area, just a quick reminder, I am actually giving the keynote presentation at PodCamp SLC this coming Friday. Go to podcampslc.com and check that out. Interestingly, I'm going to be talking about podcasting to a niche, which is exactly what I've been doing here on the Fredcast for nearly 5 years now. So be great to have you come out. Be great to meet you. That's podcampslc.com. I'm really looking forward to that. And of course, before we get out of here, I would be remiss if I didn't thank our show sponsors, Jensen USA. Check them out at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. I know you'll be pleased that you did. Their customer service is second to none. Their prices are awesome and their selection is fantastic. And don't forget the contest. We want to hear from you and hear your customer service experiences with Jensen USA, and we'll give you the contact details in just a moment. I also want to thank Audible. Don't forget to go out and get Gary V's book, Crush It. You can do that at audiblepodcast.com/cycling. And of course, we thank all of our sponsors for their support, and we thank you for supporting our sponsors. Hey, stay in touch with the Fredcast at any time of the day or night. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is simply Fredcast. You can also send us an email. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. And for listener comments, send them or give a call to area code 661-513-FRED. That's area code 661-513-3733. And of course, the website for show notes, links, and lots of other information, go to www.thefredcast.com. Now it's time for our PodSafe Cycling Music Track of the Week. Our music comes to us tonight from music.mevio.com. That is better known as Music Alley. Tonight's song is from a band called Love Spirals, and it's called Our Nights. Links in the show notes to their site on Music Alley, their own website, and of course, links to where you can find the artist and the song on iTunes. That's going to do it for this episode of the Fredcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed. And thanks for telling your friends about the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Between this show and the next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.